fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe, for the next hour. We're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Special guest on this episode of UFC Central will be Daniel Cormier, a top light heavyweight, and in my opinion, a heavyweight in the world of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. We'll also hear from Miles Jury, an undefeated lightweight who's got a big fight versus Abel Trujillo coming up real soon. We're also going to hear from Brendan Shaw, who will be competing at UFC 174 in Vancouver, British Columbia at the Rogers Arena versus Andre Arlovski, the Pitbull, the former heavyweight champion of the world, and we'll also get a legal pulse of what's happening in the world of mixed martial arts coast to coast in Canada from Eric McGregor for Combat Sports Law Blog. Now, let's kick things off with Daniel Cormier, who's got a big fight with Dan Henderson. Mr. Cormier, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Just waking up from a nap, finished a 7 a.m. workout, nap time, and then a 12 p.m. workout.
Well, it takes me to my very first question, because I'm thinking, you know, we get to see you a lot on television now. You're obviously a top contender in the UFC's light heavyweight division. I maintain you're also a contender at heavyweight. But how do you balance all of the training and the television commitments as well as being a dad?
You know, man, it's actually kind of tough, you know, but you need, like, good support. You know, Selena's great. I get up in the morning at 6:30 and go and train, And then I come home and I rest. My kids are in daycare or in school Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So that helps. You know, we get some time to just get some rest in between workouts. And then I train at noon. And by the time I get back, you know, we hang out for a little bit. And then I do my night training. So, but with a month left to the fight, there's no more TV commitments. That'll start again after I'm done training.
Well, that big fight with Dan Henderson will take place at UFC 173. We'll get to that momentarily, but I want to go back to the Patrick Cummins fight. Although it was only a minute and 19 seconds, any lessons learned for yourself with that whole experience and the fight itself?
You know, man, I think it was, I got to compete at 205, which was obviously that was my goal. My intention was to fight one of the best in Rashad Evans, but, it is what it is. Just being able to compete was a big deal for me. I did realize that the guy was a little faster. Things were moving a little bit faster in the cage than they did at heavyweight. But outside of that, I thought it was a really, really good experience, good fight, and something I can build off of.
And, of course, you're taking on Dan Henderson next at UFC 173. He had another spectacular fight versus Mauricio Shogun, who it's like these two guys are soulmates or octagon soulmates. But, you know, although he is getting up there in age, he's a very dangerous opponent. When you start preparing for a guy like Dan Henderson, other than that right hand, is there anything obvious that sticks out to you?
Yeah, I mean, there are a ton of things. You know, obviously Dan has great chin. He has a ton of heart. And also, when I look at Dan Henderson's clinching abilities, you know, his ability to fight in the clinch is something that I think it kind of goes unnoticed a little bit because of, people spend so much time worrying about his right hand. But Dan has the ability to control a fight by fighting in the clinch. And his understanding of the clinch is going to be much better than anybody else I've fought so far in my career. Because of his Greco-Roman background.
Now, in terms of his Greco-Roman background and your background in terms of wrestling, how do you think that'll match up? And you know, obviously, I believe it favors yourself. But how do you think that wrestling matches up, although it is a mixed martial arts bout?
I think it's better. You know, Dan will be able to wrestle a little bit better because he's done it at such a high level. But again, you know, I think that I've been in the sport much more recently than Dan has. I probably wrestle a lot more than he does now, so... I still anticipate going into the cage and holding the advantages. When I said that a while ago, I meant it. I meant that when I go into the octagon with anyone, I feel like I hold the advantages in wrestling. You know, it's something I did a lifetime trying to attain and sharpen that skill. And I feel like I hold the advantage even against a guy like Dan Henderson, who was also on the Olympic team.
You're listening to UFC Central right now. On the line with us is Daniel Cormier. You can follow Daniel online via Twitter at DC_MMA. He's also got a fantastic Instagram account. Follow yours truly at Showdown Joe. You take a look at what's at stake at this fight here, Daniel. You know, Dana White has and hasn't said that this fight is for the next title shot. He's sort of wavering, you know, he's sort of if and yes and no sort of thing. But what have you heard from the boss right now? Is this the number one contender fight despite the fact that John Jones will be taking on Alexander Gustafsson next?
That's what I've heard. Obviously, I heard Dan Henderson say something on an interview recently that he was told the same thing. So I believe that if I can win this fight, I think I'd be fighting for a championship. You know, I thought Dan Henderson's situation was a little more tricky, being that he had lost three fights in a row before he beat Shogun. But a big win like this could propel him back into a championship fight. I think he may need a little more work, but the situation I'm in, I believe if I win again, they'll move me to 15-0, 4-0 in the UFC. That'll be my fifth top 10 win. I think that will propel me into a title shot. Rightfully so, too, actually.
And I definitely concur, but there are times when the UFC looks at performance-based results in terms of is a fighter finishing another fighter. So when you look at that type of analogy, how important is a finish versus Dan Henderson, or simply is it just a W that needs to be required here?
I think it's a win. You know, I really don't believe that title shots are based on finishes and anything else. I mean, I know it does help to build a fight, but when a guy's won as many fights as I've won in a row, I think it's about just winning, getting your hand raised, and whether or not you're winning just decisions or finishing, and, you know, up and down, it doesn't matter. I think you have to win fights first and foremost, and that's what I've done. I think I need a win. Obviously, it's always good to go out and get a finish. I have a chance to get a performance bonus, and a finish over a guy like Dan Henderson is huge, but I don't think that will be the determining factor in whether or not I get a title shot or not.
Do you have a perfect fight in mind versus Dan Henderson, almost like a Hollywood script?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Just to get my hand raised, but also to shake his hand after we're done, and we both kind of go on with our careers. You know, Dan Henderson is a guy that I've long admired for his ability to fight and compete at a high level, and I would love for us to go out there, compete in just a barn burner, and then my hand raised, and I walk away with respect from Dan Henderson, and he always has had my respect, but the fans respect us both for Warriors and the show that we put on in the cage.
Fair enough. Now, the fight does take place in May, and John Jones, Alexander Gustafsson, is being aimed right now for some time in the fall. That would put a fair amount of time between yourself and potentially getting a title shot if you emerge victorious versus Dan Henderson. Will you wait for that title shot, or will you take anything in between?
I mean, I would wait for the title shot. You know, I believe that now is the time for me to fight for the belt. I've been waiting for a long time. And for me to fight John Jones, because I do believe that he wins against Alexander Gustafsson the second time, I would need to get better. And I would just take that time to really improve my skills, work in the gym, and just everything would fall back in place, you know, so... Yeah, I would be willing to wait because I would be willing to get myself healthy, do any maintenance I needed to my body to make sure that when I go into the octagon and fight for the title, I'm at 110% physical health, mental health, and my skills are 100% on par.
Daniel, one of the questions I'm getting asked all the time is to analyze the John Jones, Alexander Gustafsson rematch, and people are asking me, is it going to be the same fight? Will we see something different? Will Alexander win this fight? Will John Jones dominate? Put your analyst hat on right now. If you could foresee or look into that crystal ball, how do you think that fight unfolds?
You know, when I think about the rematch, I think about how great Alexander Gustafsson is because he's got unbelievable footwork. People think, well, Gustafsson's tall, his reach is what gave John problems. That's not necessarily the truth. It's just his good boxing, he's got great footwork, and obviously his length helps. But John couldn't score takedowns because Alexander was moving so well from the outside. And when you get a guy that can strike as well as Gustafsson, you're not able to mix it up with him. Then you end up in the stand-up battle, that's what happens. I think in the second fight, Jones will understand that he has to work harder to secure takedowns earlier. So I anticipate him maybe pushing him against the cage and trying to secure some takedowns. A lot of the time in the first fight, Jones was trying to get takedowns from the open, and Gustafson did a great job of moving and just creating angles. So it made John actually look a little silly. His takedowns looked a little sloppy. They looked like they weren't set up. I think this time he'll do a better job of setting up his takedowns. And I do believe that he'll win more convincingly because of that, because he'll be able to control the fight a little bit better. I think John showed you a lot in the fifth round against Gustafson to go out and dominate the way he did, and also in the last fight against Glover Teixeira, that his game's constantly evolving, and he will do whatever's necessary to guarantee victories. I think he'll be more focused in the rematch. I think he'll work harder in training in the rematch, and I think that'll all those things together combined will make it a longer night for Gustafson than it was the first time.
Now, I posed this question on Twitter earlier on to some of the fans, and I actually wrote a piece for Sportsnet.ca. I'd love to get your thoughts, because I'm one of those guys that no matter what an athlete says or does, you know, I just sit back and I don't get emotional over it. I just simply look at it and analyze it. I'm looking at John Jones. You know, the fight is over. He's still taking shots at Phil Davis. He is taking shots, you know, little pot shots at Chuck Liddell. Recently came out with a video that he actually took down, taking, you know, shots at his haters for putting his hand on top of, you know, Glover's head. It doesn't bother me whatsoever. It could be marketing 101. It could be just John being John. When you look at stuff like that, is that good for the John Jones brand, or are you indifferent over it?
Well, I mean, I think personally, I think when you look at some of the things that he does, from the tweets that he'll put up and delete to myself or to Phil Davis and anybody, I mean, I think, you know, he's young. He's still got some there's still some pettiness there when it comes to people that he doesn't really like. He seems to poke and prod at him. Me personally, if I was John, being the way that people really feel about him, I would just embrace it. I would kind of go all the way Floyd Mayweather if I was him. Stop teetering, you know, toeing the line, whether you're a good guy or a bad guy. I mean, hell, go be Ric Flair. You know, just be the complete bad guy. There's, you know, people aren't going to really like him at this point. They respect him, but, you know, from the way people feel like he's not genuine in some of the things that he says and some of his behavior, even though they don't know any different. It's just something you can see in John where people think, well, this isn't completely real. It's like, okay, I've done that. I've tried to show you guys my good side. I've tried to be the poster boy for, you know, I'm a Christian. I'm a well-spoken guy. I've tried to be the all-American athlete, and it hasn't worked. You guys turned on me. So now he should just go out and be Floyd Mayweather. You're going to watch me because you dislike me, and you're going to watch me because you want to see me lose, but I'm too good to lose. And I think that would actually benefit him a lot more.
That's an assessment that I've been dealing with over the past couple of years with John. I think I'm starting to agree. I'm starting to teeter-totter on that side of the fence. But we'll move on to someone. Final question, who is basically the complete opposite of that. Cain Velasquez, the heavyweight champion in the world. UFC 180 taking off for Beauty Verdum. But first, he must record The Ultimate Fighter, Latino America. I'm very excited for Cain. Although, despite the fact that Cain has told me numerous times that, look, man, I'm not an emotional guy. I'm quiet. I'm reserved. I wonder how he'll looked upon on that show, because he's already a hero down there, but he never stirs the pot. Were you trying to entice him to stir the pot a little bit?
You know, man, I think that's not in his nature. You know, Cain's kind of a hard-nosed, to-the-point type of guy. So, you know, Cain's got friends, and I think that we'll probably do more of the pot stirring for him on The Ultimate Fighter, because, I mean, you know, we're the American Kickboxing Academy, and when you get one of us, you get all of us. So it's not like you're going to just see Cain Velasquez and Javier Mendez out there. You know, you're going to see myself. You're going to see Luke Rockhold. You're going to see John Fitch and all the rest of our guys, too. So we'll probably stir the pot a little more than Cain, and then just leave it to Cain in November to go and take care of all the stuff that we started. Hey, Cain, go take care of that. We pissed Fabricio off. Now you got to go and fight him.
that.
Fair enough, fair enough. And one final thing. Is there more infectious laugh than Cain Velasquez's?
It's kind of creepy, actually. It's kind of this creepy, funny laugh. I mean, it's just cool. I mean, he's a cool guy, man. You got to understand, you know, like when you guys see Cain laughing and joking, it's almost like new and odd, but that's kind of what we see all the time. You know, like he's a very silly guy whenever you get to know the dude. It's just that he doesn't really let many people into his circle, you know, just, you know, Cain's a cool guy. You know, I like tennis shoes. That's my thing. The other day he sent me a text message of these shoes. He goes, "You like them?" I'm like, "Man, those are nice." I go, "You love them, don't you?" He's like, "No, they're terrible, but do you want them?" I'm like, "Of course I want them. I love them." You know, like, but he's like, just that, though. You know, he's over and I don't even know where Cain is, but he knows that, you know, I like tennis shoes. So he's like, he's thinking that these may be shoes that DC would like, so he's going to get them for me. Obviously, I'm going to pay him back, but it's just stuff like that. You know, he does things like that for his friends. You know, Cain's a little more outgoing guy than people see, and I think he prefers it that way. He gave me a pair of lugs that I had to wear because he gave them to me. He's like, "Hey, they're a gift, so you're obligated to wear them." So I was walking around with these shoes I didn't really like all that much, but he was right. You know, you can't not wear a gift.
Yes, I've been lucky enough to be around Cain on numerous occasions, and I can definitely attest to some of the stuff that you're saying. He's just a class act. You're a class act. I know you're busy. Thank you very much for taking the time, and I look forward to seeing you in Las Vegas.
Hey, Joe, thank you for having me.
All right, there you have it. Daniel Cormier taking on Dan Henderson in just a couple of weeks in Las Vegas. But now we move forward to somebody I've been getting to know very well over a couple of years, Miles at Fury Jury. Follow him online at Fury Jury via Twitter. Miles, obviously a big fight coming up shortly. But first things first, Diego Sanchez, that fight there showcased an absolutely mature fighter. You're still young, you're undefeated. But I got to think to myself, my goodness, what a great performance. What lessons did you learn in that fight?
Well, this is the lessons that I learned in that fight is that, you know, I'm one of the best in the world. I'm up there with guys that fought for the title. I'm up there with household names. And that, you know, it's something that I know I've always, you know, been at that level. But until you actually, you know, it's a lot easier to sit back and talk about fighting and beating a Diego Sanchez than, you know, it actually is getting into the cage with him. So it's it just kind of just shows, this is proof that, you know, what I'm doing is paying off and that I'm one of the best fighters in the world.
And if you think about it, not just Diego Sanchez, you defeated Mike Ricci and Ramzi Nijem, who had a great performance in Abu Dhabi. And, of course, Michael Johnson, the menace is also wreaking havoc at, you know, 155 pounds. Do you think you're on line right now, you're on track to getting to where you need to be? Or, you know what, people need to respect Miles Jury a little bit more?
I mean, I feel like I'm definitely on track to be where I need to be. I feel like, you know, everybody's got their own opinion. You know, I can sit back here and be like, you know, I want people to respect me and whatnot, but, you know, I have no control over that. It's on the fans. So, I mean, you look at my track record, man, I'm fighting guys that, you know, are on win streaks. I'm fighting guys that are known, guys that are tough. I'm not getting any easy fights, really, in the UFC. So, you know, the proof is in the pudding.
And you know what? No pun intended. The proof is in the pudding. Another tough fight in Abel Trujillo, June 28th at Ultimate Fight Night 44. Trujillo is one of those guys that every time you think he goes away, he keeps coming strong. He keeps coming forward. Obviously a very powerful guy. What's your scouting report on your next opponent?
You know, just kind of, you said it right there. You know, he's a tough guy. He's aggressive. He's, you know, he's resilient. And, you know, he's hungry right now. He's a younger guy in the UFC. And, you know, he's only got a couple of fights in. So, you know, he's looking to make a name for himself. So, you know, I'm slowly adjusting to his style and getting ready for him. So yeah, I'm excited for the matchup.
Now you're training over at Alliance MMA. To my understanding, you just finished a training session right now.
Yep, training at Alliance MMA. We just had kickboxing with takedowns. So I sparred a couple of rounds with Jeremy Stevens, and then a couple of rounds with Michael Chandler.
Oh my goodness, so Chandler and Stevens! Wow, your day isn't going very well, or is it?
What's that?
Is your day actually going well? I mean, anyone tells me that they're competing or sparring with Jeremy Stevens or Michael Chandler, my goodness. I mean, you cannot be having a good day, can you?
Oh, man. I mean, like, it's a good day because I'm getting that work in. You know, I'm training with some top-level guys in the world and getting better. But, I mean, I'm limping around right now. My left ankle's all sore. My freaking right leg from some leg kicks are all beat up. So, yeah, I'm definitely feeling, after sparring, feel like I got into a fight.
For sure. Well, that's normal considering you're in a training camp right now. Are you doing the full training camp at Alliance?
Yep, doing the full training camp at Alliance.
Now take a look at some of the guys that you get to spar with. What's some of the advice that these guys have given you, not just mentally but physically, or sorry, not just physically but mentally as well? Because Trujillo is one of those guys, like we saw in that Varner fight, that he's not going to go away. And in the last fight he had there, I mean, the guy is crazy. If you think, I mean, he's nuts.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. And the mental stuff that I've learned training with those guys is, you know, just different scenarios, you know, just staying active, staying, just always working, you know, always constantly being aggressive and trying to finish fights. You know, it's a mentality, trying to finish fights. And, you know, we're at a high level right now where I love finishing people, but, you know, you can only try as hard as you can, you know, try and finish some of these guys. They're so tough.
You literally just took the next question and final or second to last question right out of my mouth. As you move up, it gets more difficult to finish guys. Does that change the training at all?
No, the training never really changed. You know, I'm always training to, you know, to be an animal, man, to be vicious, to try and finish fights, to, you know, to make people pay for, you know, for trying to shoot on me or trying to hit me or whatever. But, you know, the training really doesn't change. It's just the level of competition keeps getting, you know, more and more, you know, closer and closer and closer as I work my way up.
What's your perfect fight versus Abel?
Perfect fight versus Abel is coming away with a W. I don't care how. Just getting that W and working my way up against, you know, the rankings.
As always, thank you very much for your time, my man.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it, brother.
There you have it, Miles Jury. Make sure you follow Miles online via Twitter, at Fury Jury, because there's so much about to happen in this guy's career. He's obviously 14-0. He's 14-0, and he continues to get better. Abe Trujillo is another guy he'll be taking on, a very tough fighter, so it remains to be seen as Miles continues to make his way up that 155-pound ladder. This guy will be getting a ton of respect, mark my words, by the end of this year. But first things first, a tough fight versus Abe Trujillo. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to hear from Brendan Schaub, who'll be taking on Andre Arlovski at UFC 174 in Vancouver. We'll also hear from Eric McGracken. I want to get his thoughts on a bunch of legalities from the world of mixed martial arts. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Special thanks to Daniel Cormier and Miles Jury, who joined me in the first half hour, or first portion of the show. But now we move forward to UFC 174, Vancouver, British Columbia, where Brendan Schaub will take on the Pitbull, Andre Arlovski, the former heavyweight champion of the world. And Brendan joins us right now. Mr. Schaub, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Let's get ready to talk about the fact that you're coming to Vancouver to compete, although it is bittersweet for yours truly, because whenever I'm at a UFC event and I've got tons of television to do, I want Brendan Schaub on set with me to either take shots at me for my rankings or take shots at my analysis or agree with me, but you'll be competing in the octagon, so I don't know if I'm happy or sad with that one.
I know, man. You're my partner in crime on set. I love it. But I tell you what, there's no better place to fight than Canada. You know, this is the second time I'll be up there in Canada fighting. My last one was at UFC 165, and there's no better fans than the Canadians, so I'm pretty excited.
Well, let's take a look at that last fight, because, you know, that Mamet Trione bout, what are the lessons learned in that scrap?
Not a lot. Not a lot. That, you know, my ground game, you know, is getting up there, and, you know, I didn't take any punishment really in that fight. You know, and then that was my last fight on my Ultimate Fighter contract. So I had to renegotiate. So, you know, I had to kind of sit on the sidelines for a little bit there. So I'm just excited to get back in there. It's been too long of a layoff. And, you know, when the UFC called me with this Andre Arlovski matchup, it doesn't get much bigger than that. And when they told me it was in Vancouver and I only have 6 weeks, it just the stars aligned for me, that's for sure.
6 weeks, though, is a bit of short time, don't you think? I mean, would you not rather have had 9 or 10?
No, it's not for me. I'm always training. I'm always training. So my manager Lex and then my head coach Tony Jeffries called me and they said, all right, you got to fight. And the good news is it's in 6 weeks. You can't overtrain. So for me, it's a blessing.
Wow, that's the first time I heard a guy at this level, 6 weeks is good. But well, that's good for you, man. But look at the guys that you're training with. Especially, I've got my eye on a guy like Henner Gracie. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Gracie Bullyproof series and anything and everything to do with the Gracies, because that's how, you know, I got started in the sport. But can you talk about his influence on your training?
Yeah, you know, Huron and Henner, you know, I train with those guys too, probably 3-4 times a week, and I've been under their tutelage for now over 2 years. And you know, it's rare you meet people, you know, in this business who are life changers, and those guys are life changers. Not only as far as my ground game and you know, the fight game, but just my overall presence at, you know, just living in Los Angeles, and just kind of they just kind of changed my mentality on fighting and not being in such a rush, and kind of taking it one step at a time and not overlooking opponents and stuff like that. So those guys, you know, I say it all the time, those guys kind of changed my life. They took me under their wing, and it's been a great just a great add to my camp and just to my life.
Now, the whole situation before we got to Orlovsky was there was a Mark Hunt proposal out there. Whatever happened with that?
Yeah, you know, I challenged Mark to a winner-takes-all fight. He accepted it, and then, you know, he's had this hand surgery, and he had this baby, and they wanted to wait. And, man, I was sick of waiting. It just wasn't going to happen. And, you know, I shot for the stars and landed on the moon in Andre Orlovsky. I think it's a bigger fight for me. And, you know, I wasn't going to wait any longer for Mark. It just wasn't going to happen. His time would come. He dodged a bullet. And now my focus is on Andre.
Now, I was there for Andre Arlovsky's last fight in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. It was basically a prelim fight. He was at the post-fight press conference, but not on the dais. And we knew for some reason that was the end of Andre Arlovsky's career. So the fact that he came back puts a smile on many of our faces. It surprised a lot of us, considering it almost came out of the blue. And then, of course, you have, I'm looking at social media saying, oh, Brendan Schaub's going to murder this guy. He's going to kill this guy. And, you know, like, listen, two guys get in the octagon, you never know what can happen. How do you eliminate people saying that you're going to absolutely destroy this guy to the realization that this guy can hurt me?
Yeah, that's I don't see any of that stuff, really. You know, I get some people's reactions. You know, everyone knows who Andre Arlovsky is. You know, Andre chose to be away from the UFC this long. He's won his last 6 out of 7 fights. You know, he's been fighting on the World Series of Fighting, stuff like that. But Andre, you know, for him, I think it was more about right timing, stuff like that. Listen, fighting Andre Arlovsky anywhere is tough, let alone his comeback fight into the UFC. This is all this guy's been focused on. This is all he wants to do. And we're not talking about Andre Arlovsky, who every other week was fighting, you know, Tim Sylvia or, you know, one of the three heavyweights they had back then. We're talking about Andre Arlovsky, who has been competing at a very high level. We just saw, you know, he went toe-to-toe with Anthony Johnson. He's ranked number 5 now in the light heavyweight rankings. So he's been competing at a very high level. And not to mention, he's with Greg Jackson's camp now. So he's training with John Jones every day, Travis Brown, Tim Kenny, all these monsters. So I get to welcome back, you know, basically Andre Arlovsky 2.0. It is not going to be an easy fight by any means.
What concerns you the most, though, of Andre Arlovsky 2.0?
You know, what people, I don't know if people know this. I'll post it tomorrow on my Instagram, a throwback pic. Andre and I trained together for quite some time at Jackson's camp when he very first got there. And we had these wars. It'd be tough for the, you know, if there's judges sitting ringside at our practice, it'd be tough for them to score the rounds. Me and him went back and forth. There's just no quit in him. And he's athletic. He has great footwork. Obviously, his boxing is, you know, nowadays with the UFC, probably the best in the heavyweight division, him or Dos Santos, I'd say. So he poses a lot of threat on the feet. His takedown defense is very good. It's just a tough fight. I'm going to have to use every aspect of the game to beat this guy. And I haven't had to do that before. Really, I always have a huge advantage in some area. And in this one, it's kind of, you know, for my camp, it's tough to see. I definitely have advantages. But it's not as clear as other fights. Like in the Mitrione fight, we knew that fight goes to the ground. It's only a matter of time before Matt gets choked. LeVar Johnson just had no answer for the ground game. Andre Arlovsky, it's not that way. You're talking about a Sambo world champion, black belt. It poses a lot of threat for me.
You're listening to UFC Central. Right now on the line with me is Brendan Schaub. You can follow him on Twitter, at Brendan Schaub. He's also got an incredible Instagram account. You can follow yours truly, at Showdown Joe. So with that being said, with the Pitbull himself, sounds to me like you're getting ready for an ugly 15-minute affair unless that finish presents itself.
Yeah, unless there's a big opening, you know, this one's, you know, you're looking at fight of the night honors, or you're looking at one for the history books. Andrei Lasky's, you know, one of the biggest names in the world of fighting, and now that he's at the UFC, I get to welcome back, and man, you know, I wish Andre the best, but come June 14th, it's not going to be the case. So he can start his comeback trail, but it's not going to start with Brendan Schaub, that's for sure.
I think it's safe to say that Rogers Arena in Vancouver, British Columbia, will be lit on fire when you two guys, when that referee steps out of the way. But again, with that being said, I know the W is the most important thing for you to climb up the rankings. But seeing as he's such a great striker, he's training at Jackson's. He's a world sambo champ, or a great sambo fighter at the very least. Do you have a perfect fight, a very satisfying fight that you'd like to have against Andre?
Or finish? Yeah, I mean, this one, I can't really let it go to the judges. Especially if I want to get up there in title talks. You know, a big win over Andre, a convincing win over Andre Lasky. That'd be three in a row for me, and that's hard to do in the heavyweight division. So I have a good case to get up there and get a top five opponent next. Definitely not overlooking Andre, but I got to go in there and I got to make a statement. And I think with the Mitrione fight, you know, I started that path, and obviously a big win over LeVar Johnson, but there's nothing like being a legend. And I did it with Mirko Krokop. I beat the likes of Gonzaga, stuff like that. So it's back to business for me, back to beating legends. I've been there with Nogueira, Krokop, so Gonzaga, so let's do this. So I think they know who to call when they want someone to take out a legend.
You're basically writing my scripts for my next UFC Central TV show. I appreciate that.
I got you, man.
Before we let you go, though, your Alchemist MMA teammate or stablemate, Rory McDonald, is also on this card.
Yeah.
He's taking on Tyron Woodley. Before we let you
go, that's a good fight.
It's a crazy fight for us here in Canada, and it's incredible for the welterweight division. The winner will likely take on Johnny Hendricks next. Put your analyst hat on. How do you see that fight unfolding?
Nah, man, you want to talk about a fight. There's no better division right now in the UFC than at 170, the welterweight division. I just think Rory has too many ways to win. I think in the early rounds, Woodley, you know, might win that first round, but after then, we're going to see kind of Rory take over just based on his skill set. Rory's jab, Rory's footwork could be the difference. Woodley's super explosive come early, but I just think Roy is going to have too many tools to win this fight. I think it's going to be a decision. I think it's going to be for Roy.
Listen, man, I want to appreciate you very much for coming on here. My final advice to you is please bring your suit just in case you can do some TV stuff with me when you get to Vancouver.
No, I'd love that. You know it, man. I'm always rocking the suit.
There you have it, Brendan Schaub. So we heard from Brendan, we heard from Miles Jury, and we heard from DC Daniel Cormier. Now let's take a look at some of the legal aspects from the world of mixed martial arts. As you know, it's still a new sport, and across Canada, there are various territories and provinces that allow it, that don't allow it, that are making some changes. So I thought, why not bring in Eric McGracken from Combat Sports Law Blog to give us a pulse of what's happening in the industry. Eric, how are you today, sir?
Joe, doing well. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, as you know, I'm a huge fan of your site, combatsportslaw.com, and there's always information there that kind of feeds my interest, and I'm always going back and forth trying to figure out what is the latest in terms of legalities in the world of mixed martial arts. And then one of the latest posts that you have is regarding grappling events under Section 83 of Canada's Criminal Code, and you kind of make the argument for both sides, but when you take a look at it, how do you think this is all going to unfold?
Well, I think with time, eventually all of the provinces are going to weigh in and have their own legislative solutions. So you're not going to have that question mark there. But this one's really interesting because right now, if you come to me for legal advice and ask me whether you could host a grappling event, you know, like a submission jiu-jitsu tournament in Ontario, the answer is I don't know. I could argue both sides of the equation, you know, fairly well. And, you know, my gut is that you can't. But I don't think the province really is paying attention. They seem to be turning a blind eye to amateur combat sports in Ontario, not just for grappling, but for MMA. And if you ever really did scrutinize the situation, the interesting thing is when Bill S-209 was being debated, Senator Runciman, the man that wrote the law, was asked specifically whether it's going to make grappling events illegal, and his answer is no, that folks running grappling events shouldn't be concerned about Bill S-209. So it's you know, it's an interesting situation.
Well, he mentioned that it's in the spirit of why the law was created. And can the same be said for amateur mixed martial arts?
Well, you know, the analysis is a little bit different only because I guess there's some distinguishment between striking combat sports and non-striking combat sports. You know, at least for me, that's the only reason why I could think of any kind of you know, disparity in why one's legal and why the other one isn't legal. But here's what it comes down to, Joe. When it comes to interpreting the law, if it's clear on its face, you don't have to start digging into what the lawmakers intended when passing it. And so on its face, at least, you know, from my interpretation, S-209 is pretty clear that it does apply to grappling sports. But if you take the senator's comments, it looks like it maybe wasn't intended there. So I don't know if a court would even have to get into that. But, you know, there really is a question mark, and it comes back to the same solution for me, which is, you know, we don't need lawyers interpreting this stuff. We need the lawmakers to make it very clear. Bill S-209 passed the buck to the provinces to set out a framework for what kind of amateur and professional combat sports they want in their provinces and to explain how those should be regulated. And provinces should pick up the reins and pass very clear legislation so there isn't a question mark about what's legal and what isn't legal.
We're in conversation right now with Eric McGracken. You can follow Eric online via Twitter, at Eric McGracken. It's spelled M-A-G-R-A-K-E-N. You can follow yours truly, at Showdown Joe. Both of us, keen interest, obviously, in the world of mixed martial arts. So now we move across the country to New Brunswick, who basically they're creating a province-wide mixed martial art, or at least combat sports commission. A great step for the province, but you know, what's your take on that, and how long will that take, do you think, to actually go into law, and so they can, so, you know, the UFC or the promoters can start having events there?
Yeah, no reason to think this won't be done within this calendar year. Bill 72 is the law you're discussing. So this was introduced in New Brunswick's legislature last week. Bill 72 is the law which is going to regulate professional MMA along with a host of other pro and amateur combat sports. And I'm happy to get into it a little bit. There's nothing unique about what Bill 72 is doing on the pro side. It's going to create a province-wide athletic commission, and they're going to be tasked with overseeing all professional combat sports in New Brunswick, except for, quote, pro wrestling. That's going to be left alone, but that's what's happening there, and MMA is going to be included in those professional combat sports. On the amateur side, to New Brunswick's credit, they're going to address the situation, but they're doing it in a pretty unique way. Bill 72 is not legalizing amateur MMA. It gives the province the right to regulate it if they add it as a designated sport by regulation, but on its current wording, amateur MMA is not going to be legalized. And then the other thing that New Brunswick is doing is it identifies the amateur combat sports which are legal, which are going to be the Olympic combat sports plus karate. And what they've done there is they're going to select provincial sporting organizations, and each one's going to get the reins to regulate their own amateur combat sports, and you need to get those PSOs oversight, otherwise you're going to be breaking the law in New Brunswick. So it's a bit of a unique situation, and the other thing they've done is they've carved out an exception for educational institutions. So if you're practicing karate or boxing as part of a school curriculum, then you don't need to go through the PSO oversight. So, it's just a good example of how the law is shifting from province to province after Bill S-209 came on the books.
You mentioned PSO, provincial sporting organizations. You take a look at what's happening in Ontario. You do have a post there saying willful blindness remains Ontario government response to amateur MMA, and it's nothing new for those that have been living in this province. It's always been, it's not ambiguity, but it's also, it's not very transparent. We never really know what's going on, and it seems that events can take place unless the right person has the event, or I guess the wrong person has the event, and that's when it seems like the commission will come in and try and, you know, charge someone or stop someone. What is your take on what's happening in Ontario? You think it's going to be status quo for the next little while?
Yeah, you know, from the people that I speak to that know something about it, they tell me nothing will likely happen until the next provincial election cycle. So I guess the status quo is there. But, you know, it's really a shameful situation. You just had the Canadian Amateur MMA National Tryout to take place in Ontario, and by all accounts, it was a well-run event. But by the book, it still violates Section 83 of the Criminal Code. There's no legal framework for amateur MMA in Ontario. But as you point out, some events take place, and it's a bit of a gamble as to whether the government's going to shut these down. And from a government responsibility perspective, it's very shameful, because if they want amateur MMA to be legal, they need to, you know, simply come out and say it. You know, pass an order in council, pass a regulation saying that it's okay, and talk about how it needs to be regulated. Otherwise, the athletes and the promoters that want to encourage the growth of the sport are really taking a gamble as to whether they're going to be shut down or face criminal prosecution. So I'm not a fan of what's happening in Ontario right now.
Welcome to my world since 1996, my friend. But another story for another day. I'm looking at Alberta at the moment, and they still don't have a province-wide commission. And it seems to me the biggest promoter in the sport, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, especially in Canada, will only be heading to provinces that have a province-wide commission. Now, many fans are always hitting me up on Twitter or on various social media that, you know, Edmonton wants to host a UFC event. Why isn't the UFC coming back to Calgary? They promised us a Calgary show. And one of the you know, explanations I give, perhaps, is, I don't know for sure, but there's no province-wide commission. It's all municipal there. Have you heard anything from the province of Alberta where they are going to start a province-wide commission?
I haven't heard anything from the province directly, but I know that the local governments in Alberta, I'm forgetting the name of it now, but basically all of the local governments, the municipal governments get together from time to time, and they make recommendations to the province. I know that the local governments got together, and they have recommended to the province that a province-wide commission come in. It makes sense that government is going to be responsive to that. So if I had to guess, I would say eventually a province-wide commission will come in, but I haven't heard of any specific legislation out there.
In your province, British Columbia, the UFC is coming there June 14th with a beautiful main event with Demetrius Johnson taking on Ali Bagotinov. We got Rory McDonald taking on Tyron Woodley. But the bottom line is, it took a while for the Ultimate Fighting Championship to return, at least to the city of Vancouver, because of the very issues they had with the municipal commission. They create the province-wide commission. Lo and behold, they're back now. What do you see the difference being now as opposed to then?
Well, it's a good example for other provinces, be it Alberta or elsewhere. The province-wide commission is the most sensible one, because you have the ability to align the rules and laws with other jurisdictions, with the ABC's desires, with the UFC's desires in terms of the laws that should be on the books. So, you know, it's a good example. But as you know, when Vancouver was running it, they put up some roadblocks, some very expensive financial roadblocks, if the UFC wanted to come back to town. And I think with all of the options the UFC has on the table with where they're going to host events, Vancouver wasn't desirable. But now that we've got the province-wide commission, those roadblocks have been taken down. The UFC could come here and do business under a model they're familiar with without any kind of extra expenses, and it's encouraging for business. So I think BC has been a very good example for how a province should respond to Bill S-209. I'm not saying that every province needs to copy BC's model with the way they've done it, but they responded on a global basis where they picked up the reins, they addressed professional combat sports, they addressed amateur combat sports, they said what needs to be regulated and what doesn't, and there's a lot of certainty, not just if the UFC wants to come to town, but for any combat sports promoters, BC has a very solid framework in terms of knowing what's going to be legal, what's not going to be legal. And I think other provinces could learn from BC's example here.
Before we let you go, Eric, is there anything specific on your mind that you're keeping an eye on that we could take a look at pretty soon on combatsportslaw.com?
Well, you know, the one topic that really fascinates me is when you have either PED litigation or else concussion litigation, you know, where are all the chips going to land? And that Ontario Bar Association combat sports event that you attended, and I was there via webinar, couldn't make it across the country in person, but that gave some great insight into what Zuffa wants to do or what they plan on doing if a lawsuit's ever launched against them for PEDs and for concussion issues. And in a soundbite, they're going to try to deflect responsibility to state and provincial athletic commissions, and it's probably a sound strategy on their part. They say, look, we're regulated by the government, we cooperate with the government, and so long as that standard is met, who are we to interfere with that? I think state and provincial and even city commissions need to pay attention to this issue, because if there's ever a legal fallout from a tragedy in combat sports, commissions are going to be brought into it. And if you take a look at the laws that commissions are supposed to enforce, and you look at all the ways that commissions turn a blind eye to some of their laws, that's where there's going to be some legal traction if there's ever fallout. So you know, my biggest interest is seeing what regulators are doing and how they're applying or ignoring their laws and what kind of fallout might come from that. So that's always keeping me busy in terms of keeping up to speed on things, Joe.
Well, I know you're a busy guy. I want to thank you very much for your time and look forward to hearing you very soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Joe. Cheers.
There you have it, Eric McGracken. Special thanks to Eric. Special thanks to Brendan Shaw, Miles Jury, and Daniel Cormier, DC, who'll be taking on Dan Henderson next month in Las Vegas. You've been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. I am the